Chapter 45. Reacher kept on going until the residential compound's field stone wall loomed up at him. It was hard to see in the darkness, but it was easy to climb. Plenty of toeholds in the unmortared joints. He drove halfway around its circumference and parked the truck opposite where he guessed the oversized barn would be. He killed the engine and got out quietly and was over the wall less than 10 seconds later. The runway was right in front of him, maybe 60 feet wide, maybe 900 yards long, beaten flat, carefully graded, well-maintained. At each end was a low hump, a concrete emplacement for a floodlight set to wash horizontally along the runway's length. Across it, and directly ahead, was a wide expanse of scrub, dotted here and there with landscaped areas. The plants were all sharp-leaved things that looked silver under the night sky. Native. Adapted to the desert. Xeric plants, or xerophilus, drought-tolerant, from the Greek prefix zero, meaning dry, hence Xerox, for copying without wet chemicals. Zeno of Sicium would have been puzzled by Xeroxing, but he would have approved of xeriscaping. He believed in going with the flow. The unquestioning acceptance of destiny. He believed in basking in the sun and eating green figs, instead of spending time and effort trying to change nature with irrigation. Reacher crossed the runway. Ahead of him and behind the last planted area was the big barn. He headed straight for it. It was a three-sided building open at the front. It was entirely filled with a white airplane. A Piper Cherokee, parked nose out, settled dead level on its tricycle undercarriage, dormant and still, and dewed over with cold. Close to 10 o'clock in the evening, close to the halfway point of its normal nightly flight plan. But that night it was still on the ground. It hadn't flown at all. Why not? Reacher walked right into the barn and skirted the right-hand wingtip, came back to the fuselage, and found the step, and climbed on the wing and peered in through the window. He had spent time in small planes, when the army had wanted him to get somewhere faster than a jeep or a train could have gotten him. He had found them small, and trivial, and somehow unserious. They were like flying cars. He had told himself they were better built than cars, but he hadn't found much concrete evidence to convince himself with. Thin metal, bent and folded and riveted, flimsy clips and wires, coughing engines. Thurman's Cherokee was a plain four-seat workhorse, a little worn, a little stained. It had tinny doors and a divided windshield and a dash less complicated than most new sedans. One window had a small crack. The seats looked caved in and the harnesses looked tangled and frayed. There was no paperwork in the cabin, no charts, no maps, no scribbled latitudes and longitudes. There was no real freight capacity, just a couple of small holes in various nacelles and voids, and the three spare seats. "People don't joyride at night," Lucy Anderson had said. "There's nothing to see." Therefore, Thurman was carrying something somewhere, in or out. Or visiting a friend, or a mistress. Maybe that was what lay preacher meant. You preached and you got laid. Reacher climbed down off the wing. He strolled through the gloom and took a look at the other outbuildings. There was a 3-car garage at the end of a straight quarter-mile driveway that led to an ornamental iron gate in the wall. There was another, smaller barn. The house itself was magnificent. It was built of oiled boards that shone halfway between blonde and dark. It had numerous peaked gables like a mountain chalet. Some windows were 2 stories high. Paneling glowed dark inside. There were cathedral ceilings. There were fieldstone accents and rich rugs and clubby leather sofas and armchairs. It was the kind of gentleman's retreat that should always smell of cigar smoke. Reacher could still taste the part-smoked cigarette in his mouth. He walked all the way around the house, thinking about camels, and camels, and the eyes of needles. He arrived back at the big barn and took a last look at the airplane. Then he retraced his steps through the landscaping, across the runway to the wall. 10 seconds later, he was back in the stolen truck. The fieldstone wall had been easy to climb, but the metal wall was going to be impossible. It was a sheer 8-foot-high vertical plane, topped with a continuous horizontal cylinder 6 feet in diameter, like a toilet roll balanced on a thick hardcover book. It was a design derived from prison research. Reacher knew the theory. He had been professionally interested in prisons back in the day. Stone walls or brick walls or wire fences could be climbed, however high they were. Broken glass set in the tops could be padded or cushioned. Rolls of barbed wire could be crushed or cut. But 6-foot cylinders were unbeatable. Compared to the length of an arm or the span of a hand, their surfaces were slick and flat and offered no grip at all. Getting over one was like trying to crawl across a ceiling. So he drove on through the empty acres of parking, hoping against hope that the personnel gate would be open, and if it wasn't, that one of the deputy's keys would unlock it. But it wasn't open, and none of the keys fit, because it didn't have a keyhole. It had a gray metal box instead, set into the wall well to the right, where the gate's arc of travel wouldn't obscure it. The box was the kind of thing that normally held an outdoor electrical outlet. It opened against a spring closure. Inside was a 10-digit keypad, a combination lock. 1 through 9, plus 0, laid out like a telephone. A possible 3,628,800 variants. It would take 7 months to try them all. A fast typist might do it in 6. Reacher drove on, tracking the north wall and the Tahoe's established ruts, hoping against hope that the vehicle gate would be open. He was slightly optimistic. The Tahoes had left in a hurry, and the ambulance, and people in a hurry didn't always clean up after themselves. The vehicle gate was open. It was built like a double door, each half cantilevered outward and then swung through 100 degrees on a wheeled track, and both halves were standing wide open. Together they made a mouth, a chute, a funnel, a V-shaped invitation leading directly to an empty 40-foot gap in the wall and to the darkness beyond. Reacher parked the deputy's truck nose out, right across the wheeled track, blocking the gate's travel, and he took the keys with him. He figured maybe the gate was motorized, or on a time switch, and come what may, he wanted to keep it open. He didn't want it to close with him on the wrong side. Climbing out would be as impossible as climbing in. He walked 100 feet into the plant, felt the familiar terrain underfoot, heavy and sticky with grease and oil, crunchy with shards of metal. He stood still and sensed giant shapes ahead, the crushers and the furnaces and the cranes. He glanced right and half saw the line of offices and storage tanks. Beyond them, nearly a mile away and invisible in the night, the secret compound. He took half a step in its direction. Then the lights came on. There was an audible whoomp as electricity surged through cables thicker than wrists, and in a split second the whole place lit up blue and brighter than day, a shattering sensation, physical in its intensity. Reacher screwed his eyes shut and clamped his arms over his head and tried hard not to fall to his knees.